So, welcome everybody to a new episode of Table Talks. Last time we had Jim Fetterman on the road, and now we have a very special guest. It's Lauren Oldefer. Lauren Oldefer is an educator and an author and a mindfulness practitioner with a deep commitment to integrating wisdom and tradition into modern life. With a background of contemplative education, Lauren has spent decades teaching and writing about mindfulness, resilience, and inner well-being. Her personal journey took a new direction when her husband Henry was diagnosed with early stage Alzheimer's, leading her to explore the intersection of mindfulness, aging, and psychedelics. As we also inspired, she was also inspired by James Fadiman's work, and Lauren trained as a microdosing coach through the Microdosing Institute and began documenting their shared experience in her blog series, A Mindful Approach to Dementia and Psychedelics, Our Shared Journey. Through her writing, she offers an open and thoughtful exploration of how microdosing and mindfulness can support individuals and caregivers navigating the complexities of the neurodegenerative diseases. So, yeah, welcome, Lauren. So ha happy to have you here. We have been connecting a few quite a while, and yeah, we wanted to record this amazing story you have to tell and experience you have to share with the world. So, can you in short tell me a little bit about your journey and how you came up with writing this down and documenting this?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Hein, for who you are and the vision you have, and for creating the Microdosing Institute. Along with Jacobine, I took the Microdosing Institute's training, which really fundamentally changed my life. And as you had mentioned, I've been writing books on mindfulness. It's been my lens of how I live in the world. And through that, I ended up writing a book called Mindful Microdosing, a Guidebook and Journal. And I really felt that the narrative of mindfulness within the psychedelic space wasn't very explicit. And I'm still writing articles on the understanding of how you can use certain pillars based on mindfulness throughout preparation, through the journey, whether it be microdosing or macrodosing, and in integration. But then, as you mentioned, my own life took a fork in the road that is now very much a part of one of living with a husband of over 40 years who has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And so now my lens and what I share is really coming from the amazing use of microdosing in our journey and psychedelics in a very respectful and mindful way as well. So I'm sharing that on a blog every week. As my journey unfolds in real time, I'm sharing it with in writing and presenting it as a blog.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I have so much respect for you on how, yeah, on the phase of your process, of the process and the phase where you're now in and where Henry now is in. So that's amazing. But it can also, yeah, can imagine it's also very hard sometimes and challenging. And yeah, you were mentioning finding a nice place to live. So you're now based in Mexico, I believe, and you're
Well,
still now in Mexico.
I'm writing about that because 2 years ago we've been abroad. My husband and I were both American, but we met in Ecuador over 44 years ago, and we've always lived abroad, basically in Latin America, and then for about over 20 years, and then again another close to 20 years in the Indian subcontinent. He worked in humanitarian aid, and I was an educator. 2 years ago, we moved to Vermont, where our daughter and grandchildren are. And so that's when he was diagnosed, even though I knew that there were signs of dementia before the formal diagnosis. But really, living in the United States at this stage of the game, knowing what we're facing is quite difficult. And also, Vermont's really cold in the winter. So we had heard about this place in Mexico that we're checking out. And it's just all part of the journey. It doesn't mean that we're okay, we're going to move here and this is it. It's given us a vision of a possibility, and it's probably the most humane possibility where the most loving care is provided. But then the question comes up for my husband, is this what he wants? Does he want to go into memory care? And I have written on the blog that he has signed up for Dignitas. So that means that he does have the choice of exercising his right to die with dignity. Whether he exercises
Okay.
that right or not, we don't know. But what I have noticed and what I say is that it's completely changed his journey. Just knowing that he has choices, or even knowing that he won't be, as he says, caged in a memory care unit, is now not part of his psyche. I was rereading that blog to my husband this morning, and he's like, yes, it's so true. Knowing that he's given me the freedom of many years where he might potentially be in a bedridden, he's giving me that freedom of not having to be a caretaker for that. And well, as I say, we don't know what the future will bring, but for right now, it's already changed his path as to choices and what the future looks like. And I also just want to mention that I want to just give a big call out to Henry, because he is completely supportive of us talking about his situation and our situation together. And I give him just so much respect for the courage he has to help make his life a possibility for others, or an insight into how microdosing and mindfulness and psychedelics can really make a difference in the journey of dementia and caregiving.
Yeah, I almost forgot that. I was like, okay, although yeah, we need his consent and his approval to talk so openly about it. Does your inner circle and environment, your children, everybody, how do they react on this? Is it something that people have sort of an opinion about it, like, oh, don't talk about it, or sort of it, because we are still. This will definitely help ending the stigma or breaking down the stigma more and more, but there's still st stigmas surrounding
Oh, yeah. I
psychedelics for
was
them.
wondering
So,
if you were asking me about dementia or about microdosing, because actually, there's about both. And so I think it took him quite a few years to actually even tell his closest siblings, his brother and sister, who were the first, well, first our children. And even that, even to for him to admit to himself, that's also a process. Then you put on top of it microdosing. I think that I had already been involved with microdosing in a more public way when he was diagnosed. So there was a lot of support for that, because I think that people are seeing how microdosing is helping with cognition. And so that's the first thing people think of usually when you think of dementia. And also some of his family members are already doing the Stamets stack, let's say, or using microdosing in different ways. So actually, the microdosing was less had less of a stigma than dementia, actually.
Okay. Yeah, that is something that I didn't think of, but yeah, it's I understand because yeah, dementia has become a major global concern. So you think it's important to explore these alternative approaches like microdosing, and I can imagine that you combine it, or it's a synergy. Mindfulness, you already touched upon that you wrote a book on mindfulness and microdosing. It's a beautiful journal and guidebook. So why do you think it's important to explore these alternative approaches?
Well, there's really not a whole lot right now that can help with Alzheimer's. Even in my husband's case, he was very resistant to taking the medication, but he did finally try it just recently, and he found that he didn't like it at all. And it had an adverse effect on him. However, the first few years, since he was diagnosed, the doctor was offering whatever medical allopathic medicine was available to him, and every time she would go over the benefits, we're like, Well, he's already getting those benefits with microdosing. He's more present. And I think Jim Fadiman also says that that's what people report with dementia is when they are microdosing. You can tell when someone is kind of like their energy is off or their eyes are slightly glazed. And you get that feeling. It's like, okay, they're so when you don't have that, you're more present. That's kind of how it's described. And for sure, when Henry was microdosing in the beginning, that presence was very observable. And even he said he felt that he was more present. So that was one of the benefits of the allopathic medicine. Henry's cognition was much better. He had stopped reading completely. And now, when he started microdosing, he was reading for hours at a time. Anxiety was no longer there. I think that when people are diagnosed and then admit that they might be experiencing dementia, there's a fear and there's an anxiety of what is happening in the present, but also what the future may bring. I think microdosing really reduced that. And I also think that physically he would get more tired. So as someone who could outrun anyone in any given day throughout his life, we could see that he was like in the summer in Vermont, he would be gardening and then for hours and hours, but then over the last few years, it'd be less and less and less. And when he started microdosing, he could be out with greater endurance and his physicality, just his strength was greater for longer periods of time. But I would say the biggest benefit of microdosing that I will say that I witnessed as a spouse was that he would be thrashing in his sleep and he would have a lot of interrupted sleep. And we know how important sleep is. And we know that microdosing, one of the biggest benefits is better sleep. So I would say in his case, for sure, there's better sleep enhancement. And I think I wrote an article about dementia. And I use the word ease. If you have early stage Alzheimer's or beginning with dementia, I think microdosing gives you better ease. E for extra cognition, A for anxiety reduction, S for sleep enhancement, and E for extra endurance. So microdosing, we don't know that much about it in terms of dementia, but those were the characteristics that were very observable very early on, immediately.
Wow, that's interesting. So I want to touch a little bit upon the personal journey with dementia. So it started off obviously. When did you first start noticing changes in Henry, when it started?
I would say in my gut, it was many years ago, probably over 10 years ago. Then Henry took two very bad falls to his head, which escalated any symptoms. They didn't cause, according to the doctors, they don't cause dementia, but they can escalate it and bring it to the surface, more or less. So TBIs are not a good thing, but we also know that microdosing is really good for TBIs. We can see there's studies now on psychedelics, higher doses for TBI. So, all I know, so we don't have enough science behind dementia and microdosing, but all I know is all of the things that can help with connectivity are helping Henry, from an observing spouse point of view. Yeah.
So when you both found out, sort of, you talk about it, and how did you both respond emotionally to this whole new situation?
Well, I think that Henry and I have a very special relationship, and our marriage is based on helping each other in our own spiritual journeys. And I think that we've always had the lens. I'm speaking for myself. I've had the lens of mindfulness from a very young age, and so I always look at any challenge as something that is here for us for a reason. And so, of course, and also with mindfulness, it also means you don't move away from what you're feeling, like the sadness and the grief and the sense of loss. And in the beginning, for me, the sense of isolation, because in a way you don't announce it until I wanted to respect Henry's ability to announce it to our daughters first and then his siblings. But at the same time, it can be very, very isolating for the person in my case, watching something happen and trying to make sense of a lot of confusion in those beginning years, because you don't really necessarily name it as dementia or Alzheimer's. So there's a lot of behavior that seems strange, or you can't make sense of it, or you might lose trust because the person isn't doing what you think is trustworthy, really. And I think I write about this, and I think that sometimes a lot of damage can be done in relationships because of it. But then years later, you look back and say, it was the dementia. You know, like if someone breaks their arm and they can't pick something up, you don't get mad at them for not being able to pick something up. But with dementia, it's a hidden disease in the beginning. So you don't put it together that it's a disease. You look at the person's behavior. So then the idea of mindfulness coming through is like, can I be kind during these times? And oftentimes I wasn't, because I was frustrated. I didn't understand. There's forgiveness in that, but there's also a lot of deep pain and frustration and isolation in the beginning. And from the lens of mindfulness, like I feel those things, and sometimes I still do. So it's not to run away from it, but it's also to have a bigger heart of understanding. So with that lens, both Henry and I look at challenges as a way of being very proactive, and we have to come to our own understanding and willingness to look at the present in its fullness, because many people want to deny, or they'll spend years looking for alternatives. So in our case, we are really very much in the present of what happens, even in the pain, but also in the hopefulness of life. And I think one of the reasons why people are seeking out psychedelics is to experience in an embodied way many of the states of meditation, which is beyond duality. And I think Henry and I met through meditation. And so having experienced some of those states through our own practices, we live life in a different way than, say, the average person. So microdosing and the reverent use of psychedelics in our recent time since his diagnosis has been part of a very deep, rich journey that we're still on.
Yeah, I can imagine that really helps in the whole situation. I can't imagine how I would be like in these circumstances. So we're focusing on microdosing and what it does for Henry, or how it supports him. But I can imagine that it also supported you and supports you in as a caregiver, as a wife for Henry. How can you touch upon that a little bit? How is it for you?
Well, I started the blog and it was about dementia, psychedelics, and mindfulness, thinking all the focus is on dementia. But what I've really come to understand is that the journey is really about caregiving equally. Because when we talk about anybody that has dementia, we have to include the caregivers, because it's like it's a constellation of people that are involved. And ironically, just as an aside, when I finished the Microdosing Institute training and started having my own private practice with coaching people who are interested in microdosing, I really did focus on people who are senior citizens, as being one myself. But what I found really interesting was people would come to me about their spouses who had dementia, usually early stages of dementia. And I, at that time, and still, I ask if they're cognizant of what they're doing. I feel ethically that's important. I also question that, because I know that people who are in late stage Alzheimer's are taking all kinds of allopathic medicine, not to their understanding or knowledge. So even that's like something to contemplate. But in the case of microdosing, I do ask for that. And then what inevitably has happened in every single case is that the caregiver ends up being the one that's microdosing on a more continuous basis and in a more beneficial way. Because eventually, I at least in my own case, I see the microdosing is really helpful in the beginning stages. But caregiving is ongoing. And what I see is that the caregivers are under such dramatic stress. And I can give you like one example of someone who, what's one of the saddest things is seeing early onset Alzheimer's when people are diagnosed in their 40s. So one case is someone who is about to put her husband in full-time care. She's in her early 50s, and she is not a person who has depression, but because of the quickness of the onset, she had overriding feelings of sadness and grief, and also taking on everything herself. So this is a very typical scenario for any caregiver with a spouse with Alzheimer's, or a child being the sole provider for a parent with Alzheimer's. And perhaps the quickness and the gravity of it is much faster with someone with early onset Alzheimer's and their caregiver, but the similarities are there. And so what happened was she was put on SSRIs. And when I met her recently, she was like, "I've never heard of microdosing." And then someone had just given her like a pill and said, "Here, you should try this." And we don't know how much was in that pill. She didn't try it, but I also feel like in a mindful way, if you're gonna, I think microdosing has a great benefit for people rather than getting on SSRIs if they're caregivers and if they know about microdosing. I do not recommend someone just take a pill and not know what they do. In the book and throughout my writing, I always feel that as the harm reduction that the Microdosing Institute has on their website, and it's included in the book, you know, there are certain protocols, as Jim Fadiman and Jordan Gruber share in their book, that, you know, there's a protocol. Start low, know what you're doing, find a guide or a coach, if it is what I would always recommend, so that you know that you can do this in a safe and mindful way. However, the bottom line is, here's this caregiver who didn't have an alternative and didn't want to go on to SSRIs. And now she's finding that the microdosing, she had a terrible day last week. She said it was awful. And then at around 1 o'clock, she remembered that she hadn't microdosed, and she microdosed, and she said by the end of the afternoon, she realized her terrible day had turned into an okay day. You know? And so we see that microdosing can definitely help avoid going on to antidepressants if people know that that is.
It also has to come on your path, I think, when it comes to microdosing, but so I wanted to ask, what advice do you have for caregivers who are curious about microdosing but don't know where to start? But you already touched upon that, like, go slow and have these things. Do your research. That is most important, of course.
Well, one of the
Do you have
things
something
that
to
I like,
add, or?
yeah, I'd love to share, because honestly, watching care, this has been the new, and it's been fairly recent that I'm more involved in meeting other caregivers because of the community where we're staying for 1 more month is where people are coming from all over the world, where they can find their spouses have loving care for Alzheimer's and early onset Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and other dementias. So all of a sudden I'm meeting all these caregivers, and honestly, I'm learning a lot, and my heart is just so broken, because especially with early onset Alzheimer's, mostly women, it's not always the women that are the spouses. Sometimes it's the women that have the early onset, but moreover, it's the men. And some of them have young children, toddlers, and their lives are just, you know, they're working full time, an income that now isn't there from a working spouse is no longer available. So honestly, these are people who are in isolation. And so on my website, I've made available 2 things for free for caregivers. One is just a mindful meditation specifically for caregivers, and one is an intro to microdosing specifically for caregivers, because I believe that caregivers want to feel whole. And like I did with dementia, I look at wholeness as something that is really hard to attain when you're a caregiver, because your well-being is, so let's start with a W for well-being. Your well-being is being able to take care of yourself, which is oftentimes a challenge for a caregiver. I'm not saying to put boundaries on yourself, but what we do find is with microdosing, there is an increased sense of self and your self needs, so that it's not that you're putting a boundary, but you're going to be sure that you get what you need, whether it's to go out and exercise for 20 minutes and take a walk, or go to a yoga class, or eat better, or have a smoothie instead of more caffeine or alcohol. Like, microdosing helps us increase our own well-being. H is to stay healthy. Look after your own health and your health needs. And that's something that we see as a benefit of microdosing, that people are just naturally increasing their health, their physical health and mental health and well-being. Less anxiety, less depression, greater ease to take care of things. And then the O in wholeness, or in feeling whole, is that I really question, and this is a big journey for me, is how I offer my help as a caregiver to my spouse, to Henry, my loved one who is declining with dementia. So if you're really frustrated and you just can't take it anymore, what you're going to give to your loved one is not going to be out of kindness. So I think the idea, there's this concept in India of in Hindu thought of seva, it's of offering out through love, you know, that aspect of loving kindness and charity. Truly, it's done from the heart. But when we're frustrated and can't find our ground of well-being, it's very hard. So I think microdosing helps us connect to that sense of, I'm okay. I can touch and connect to my heart and then give from there. So offering anything we do in caregiving from the heart is ideal. Not always available, but ideal. The
Yeah.
L is that loving kindness. And I think microdosing helps us check in with our heart. It gets us out of our head and it gives us that possibility to connect to the heart. So then we're moving with more loving kindness. And the E in helping caregivers feel more whole is the E is that expansiveness of heart and mind. Again, these are like mindfulness qualities for sure. But when you feel that you can expand in heart and mind, you are exuding more positive energy. And I think that as a caregiver, one of the hardest things is to not feel so overwhelmed and drowned and then become this. You can live in a lot of negativity and fear, which is contracting energy. So if we can expand in heart and mind, that is expanding positive energy, which opens the possibilities for more wholeness. So for caregivers, I look at microdosing, helping them feel more whole.
Yeah, beautiful. You steal my questions actually, because you're answering my questions without asking them. Because we talk about my microdosing, of course, but I know mindfulness has played a huge role in your life, and it's your way of life. And so how has mindfulness helped you and Henry navigate through this journey? But I think these things that you mentioned is are the yeah the way you navigated through that. But how else did microdosing of mindfulness helped you and Henry to navigate?
Well, one of the things that really drew me to microdosing is because I think it's almost like it's mindfulness embodied. And I love the idea of, and we'll see more of this, of how mindfulness and microdosing merge together. So for mindfulness and microdosing, if I say that both help with greater presence, greater peace. So, if I'm going to just mention a few things, and then really those listening can say, well, is that mindfulness or microdosing? Which one is she talking about? Because both will help develop greater presence, a greater sense of equanimity, a greater sense of awareness, a greater sense of connection, and a greater sense of expansion. So, if I take that acronym of peace, I believe that when mindfulness meets microdosing, we are really getting a double dose of peace. And that's going to help in all situations, whether it be with anxiety or as a mother or father with young children, or in my case, with someone who's a caregiver and with my husband who has dementia. You know, this idea of peace and mindfulness meeting microdosing, I just feel like it's an embodied sense of mindfulness that is going to help
Yeah.
any given situation.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminded me of your master class that you because you were not only trained by Microdosing Institute, but you are also a master class facilitator or teacher in our facilitator program that will start within a month, restart again. But yeah, that reminds me of this, what you mentioned like this. And I think the first Not the first. One of the first insights I had when I started microdosing back in 2016 was like, this is a great tool for mindfulness. This is sort of like I have an NLP background, so for coaching, I thought, oh, some people they can't associate into their bodies and to their feelings and emotions, and this would be great for. To support them and to associate more and be connected more to them. So yeah, just a thought. I thought yes. So that is why I'm so happy to that we are now here, like 2025, and the idea or the insight I thought I had was like, oh yeah, it now reflects on, yeah, that it is sort of, we have to. You can't claim it, but yeah, it is. It I think I still see it as a tool for mindfulness. Like the most people that have a positive experience with microdosing, they say they feel more connected to themselves, to nature and their surroundings. They feel more in the present moments, and these things are similar as mindfulness, of course, and the techniques that are there. So yeah.
I think that's part of my initial motivation to speak out and bring more mindfulness in an explicit, articulate way into the microdosing and psychedelic space in general. Because having practiced for decades and decades, I do feel that the world has changed so much in that we're an AI growing society, interconnected society, social media society. Global society. And the idea of spending 2 hours a day for decades in a mindfulness practice or contemplative practice is really not for the average person anymore. I think that those kinds of practices are people who are willing and have a calling to go into a more retreat-like life. And so so I think we also have to look at what's modern mindfulness. How can we access some of those things in a way that is more easily accessible. And I do truly believe that if we approach microdosing and psychedelics from a mindful approach, that the experience of microdosing can help embody those same experiences of mindfulness. So in a way, microdosing is the modern mindfulness. And I've actually written on that. I think microdosing is the new mindfulness because if it's done with that reverence and approach and intent, I'm not saying that you can microdose for other reasons or recreationally, but what I do speak on is how you can do it mindfully and integrate that and to support a mindfulness way of life. And also bringing mindfulness to the psychedelic space, I do believe that there are certain pillars of mindfulness. For instance, in preparation, if we take three pillars, the pillar of beginner's mind and discernment and intention, and just to integrate those into preparation. So let's look at beginner's mind. Beginner's mind is just having that open curiosity of maybe something's new. And for me, I will say stepping into the psychedelic space has been something of, I'm very proud to be an advocate. But it is, there's a lot of stigma around that. And as you were, pointing to in the beginning of our conversation, and at this stage of my life, I'm very proud to be able to take a risk that maybe someone with a young family shouldn't be taking or doesn't feel comfortable taking it because of legalities and whatnot. But it's been such a help. I feel so strongly about the potential and power of the reverent use of microdosing and reverent use of psychedelics that I think it's almost like an ethical, moral obligation to be able to speak out on it, especially in our own personal journey. So that beginner's mind is like not having that cultural narrative stop you, but then adding discernment, like not just to go fully into something. So discernment, what would that look like? It would look like going to the Microdosing Institute and doing that exploring, you're getting the 6-week training or going to get become a facilitator or getting the book on mindful microdosing, learn and get guidance, just like someone doesn't go to the Himalayas to meditate and say, I'm going to reach enlightenment completely on their own. They're going to look for a center or a teacher. So discernment kind of helps build that foundation for that beginner's mind. And then thirdly, we hear so much about intention before microdosing or before having any other high dose of any kind of psychedelic. And I like to understand intention in a way that's, I write about it as a sankalpa. This like to really contemplate, why are you doing this? What is it that you're hoping to gain out of it? And if you contemplate that over time, over days and weeks, and sometimes even, you know, a month long contemplation, you'll keep it, it becomes a mindful contemplation. So you might start out with, I want to feel healthy, or let's just say, I want to feel joy. And you keep contemplating, what does joy mean to me? Where is that going? And why don't I feel joy? And it ends up being, oh, I don't feel safe. And then the intention is, I am safe, because we always say a sankalpa in a short positive affirmative sentence. So just contemplating that, but then bringing that intention into the preparation. So all this is already being extremely mindful before you even ingest. And I think that that's that preparation isn't just sitting there naming an intention 5 minutes before you do something, but it's really, there's this preparation so that you are, it's a mindfulness practice before you ingest. And there's a synergy before you ingest. And then when you ingest, you can close your eyes, bring your mind to your breath or to your heart, and bring that intention or that sankalpa, saying it several times, 3 times perhaps, silently or out loud, and then letting it go. Because especially if we're talking about mushrooms, each substance has its own signature personality, but you don't hold on to it. You trust that things will unfold and manifest in the way that they're meant to be.
So what would you say to people who are skeptical about using psychedelics in this way? So some people are so skeptical, or say like, hey, you're using something to get better or to do this or whatever. So what would you say to these people?
Not a whole lot, because it reminds me of, you know, 50 years ago when I started practicing meditation in a more public way, and there was a lot of skepticism then, or doing even practicing yoga 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago. It's like when you experience something and you know it to be true and you've embodied that experience, you know, so you don't have to be you don't have to be going around like, you know, an evangelist spreading the word, because you live in your own experience. So what I would say is not try to convince. I never try to convince, but people have information around them now. And what's so exciting is, in a way, yes, I think you are definitely a pioneer in this area. And I think that a lot of us are on the frontier of so much change. So in 5 years from now, if you're going to ask me that question, you may not even have to ask me, because there's going to be so much information around. But if people are interested, they can go and get really valuable information that's highly respected nowadays. We see so much more.
I think what really helped was Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind, like more mainstream knowledge in that sense. Like, hey, this is an overview. This is like someone who's respected in the health bestseller author. I believe he's now doing a podcast or an episode with Oprah Winfrey around psychedelics and the therapeutical use. So, and then of course, we put a website on with all this information, and now Jim Fadiman has written an overview of his work and all these anecdotal stories, and we call it citizen science. So more and more understanding and less stigma because of that understanding is emerging now. And With your book and your work and your journey, this really, really helps to end this stigma. So I once was interviewing Jim, and then he said the cynical, a little bit cynical quote, like, there are even people drinking coffee every morning. And I didn't get it at first, and then I was like, oh yeah, indeed, like, people are also using psychoactive substances like coffee to get more energy. So yeah, it's
Yeah, it's so
yeah.
interesting.
And then he said, yeah, it's just like eating an apple. It's just like a healthy mental food supplement, or yeah, a
It's how
vitamin,
we look at
whatever.
it, right? And even with the example I was giving of the person who's a caregiver to her husband with early onset Alzheimer's, who wants to get off SSRIs, she said she was having a terrible day. She microdosed. Then at the end of the day, she realized her day was fine. And she said, oh, but I didn't feel anything. And I think that's such a common example of my clients. It's like, oh, I didn't feel anything. But then when I have a conversation around mindful inquiry, it's like, that's a mentality that I think is very Western. Like, if I take something, I'm going to feel the effect. And really, microdosing can be so subtle. So now that she's been microdosing for a bit, I'm like, let's just track your days. And the days are always better. So I'm like, well, then, like, that's the effect. It's not like you have to feel stimulation like from coffee or an espresso or a double shot of espresso, right? So I think our understanding of what mindfulness, the benefits of mindfulness, as Jim Fadiman says, what does he say? Like, you can have a bad things get better and good things get better too, you know? That's a good assessment. But I also like Jim has mentioned that dementia will be a breakthrough area for microdosing. And I just want to mention that I did a little bit of research before we spoke today. And in the EU, there are over seven, almost close to eight, in 2022, close to 8 million people with dementia, and they estimate there'll be 14 million by 2050. Surprisingly, Switzerland has a very high rate of dementia, over 23%, which really did surprise me. The NYU Langone School of Health estimates that there'll be 1 million people a year diagnosed with dementia, and that the rates will double by 2060. And also the cost of dementia. Over, $300 billion was spent in the US in 2020. They estimate over $1 trillion by 2050. But I also want to mention, and something I'm going to be learning more about, because I personally am witnessing it, is the unpaid caregivers. So it was estimated in 2019 that $18 billion of unpaid care for people like me giving care to their husband was used, and that is at a cost to $244 billion if it had been paid. So the cost of dementia, the unpaid care that is being given, these are real issues that are going to grow as the aging population continues to grow. It's estimated that one in two Americans may experience cognitive difficulty after 55 years of age. These are amazingly relevant issues for our time. And we don't have a lot of solutions. The allopathic medicine is not there. And even my husband, he's like, well, if I had a little more time, but that, and he know, he said, but that won't be my case. I won't be alive long enough to have this. I might live longer, but my cognition will decline. There's nothing to stop that. So I think that, any kind of breakthrough that we see with psychedelics and with microdosing specifically, I think holds great promise. And we're gonna, when we, it would be fun to have this conversation again in 5 years from now, in 10 years from now, because my hope is that we're gonna see so much more science around this. And people are seeking out alternatives, and microdosing is certainly one of the ones that's coming up more on the radar for people.
But it's also, I don't know if it's a coincidence, but what you said, like that in Switzerland there was a high rate of dementia, and exactly there is the start of the first microdosing study around Alzheimer's. So conducted with the Beckley Foundation.
Yeah.
We certainly have to keep an eye on that, let's say.
So the microdosing is not just for the young at heart. I think it gets a lot of attention from a demographic that's younger. Maybe part of it is a lot of the information is around this is through social media, and most people who are, elderly or senior citizens aren't accessing social media, but their children are. And I think we're So I'm reaching out to those that are caregivers of adults with Alzheimer's. Find information out there. It is starting to emerge, and the stigma is there. It won't be there in a few years from now, but it still is looms large. But these are exciting times for medicines, earth medicines, fungi, plant medicine, synthetic, if done, I believe if you approach anything from a mindfulness perspective, that really changes the why you're doing something, how you're doing something, and the cultural narratives that might confine and constrain it, and even certain legalities might take us away from what's really at the heart of the matter. And so stay with your heart. And if you do have that beginner's mind and use discernment and have good intention, then you're approaching things from a mindful approach to psychedelics. Then I think that, that helps pave the way for possibilities.
And of course also people who are already microdosing as a caregiver or know people that are doing similar things as you. I know a few coaches in the Netherlands that work with people with dementia and with the caregivers. And so yeah, sharing these stories are so important to your story can be valuable for someone else. So so if we touch upon that and these stories, hey, you mentioned that the place where you are now and the caregivers that you meet, they talk to you about it and share their experience also. So what kind of research, if you hear that, what kind of research would you like to see in the future regarding microdosing or psychedelics in general and dementia? Is there something what can we study? Not only like, okay, what does it do in the brain, but do you have something in mind or
Oh,
maybe not? I don't know.
that's such a big question. And I think I'd probably answer it different ways on different days, but I'm going to integrate my lens of mindfulness. And I think that one of the most important things is that people with dementia, I look at dementia, and I've written about this on my blog, is that I believe that if you think of physical death, we might prepare for physical death if we know we're going to die, or we know we're going to die. So how do you want to live? And I think that dying with a peaceful heart is really important. And I think that if someone has dementia, the most important thing is that they have to speed up that process before they lose their cognition, to be at peace. And so, what does it mean to be at peace? What can be put in place to be at peace? So, that's one thing. And then for caregivers, it's somewhat similar. Because when you're losing someone in real time in very strange ways, because it's not like a very specific path, and it's not the same for each person. So some part of that person might be functioning really well while the rest isn't. It's a very, you can't really attach yourself to like specifically what's happening as things decline, but to also be at peace with happening. But what would I like to see? Certainly more studies where we're allowed to use psychedelics in a scientific way for both caregivers and people with dementia. I think we're going to see a lot of studies. But I mean, Hein, you can speak to this more, but I believe that it's much more difficult to study microdosing because when you do a high dose, you can put someone in a lab and someone in a clinically researched way. And so I think that's really difficult to do for microdosing. And then the other thing I would say is I think it's a moral obligation for people to be allowed to access psychoactive ingredients, especially towards the end of their lives, whether it be microdosing or higher doses. We're seeing people do that anyhow, but the legality should be catching up with it.
Like my, Jim says, always says, like mushrooms, they don't know that they are illegal, and they grow everywhere in the world, and it's so strange that these mushrooms are sort of illegal in some in most countries, or psilocybin is. Like the end of life and being at ease. Of course, the first study that was picked up again in the 90s was around this topic, like people who are have anxiety and are terminal cancer patients in the study that Johns Hopkins did and Roland Griffin did. That was such a groundbreaking, but also like it was a catalyst of having more and more research around this topic. But now we see like one of our ex-students, Jelle, is also giving I don't know the word, palliative care, sort of like end of life care, you know. So yeah, we are exploring that also. Like, okay, why don't we? Sorry for my English. Why can't we people have access to an experience that could be sort of a like an significant change in life and way of ending your life? You're still gonna die. We're all gonna die, of course, but the way you look at it and like the results that had that study also is that you feel more at ease, and that's for everybody in your surroundings is also very positive, because then you accept that your path in that sense. And so we're now in Holland, we can more openly do these kind of experiences because we can give retreats, so also around this topic. I hope that also will evolve in more understanding around that. And that's yeah.
I think that's so significant because I know in Henry's own journey, it was very significant. So, as a very, very long time meditator, he has reached certain states of bliss and non-dual states where he has experienced more than what meets the eye in this world. But I think most people don't. But even for Henry, there was an anxiety, there was a fear about what is coming. And he also has been reading a lot about high dose psychedelics and that promise of having experience and embodying something that's greater than being in a physical body. And I write about his experience with Bufo with 5-MeO-DMT. It was a very brief experience. I mean, Bufo is a very fast acting, but Henry. He was kind of attached. I want to have a high dose experience. I want to have a high and also I anyhow, so that was the experience he had. And honestly, he came out of that in such a blissful understanding and at a certain degree of such deep peace of having experienced what he called creation, the beauty of creation that went beyond and into a sense of oneness. And then I, as the mindfulness spouse advocate that I am, kept trying to couch that in a way you could call it almost therapy, of really giving the understanding and embracing the understanding that his heart is at peace, for him to understand and recognize and be aware and cognitively aware that now his heart is at peace. And it took a little while for him to like let that really sit and be ongoing and real. But then I couched it in terms of, well, what more do you need? And that was a pivotal point in his journey of honestly being at peace. From then on in, I think the anxiety left him. And so those bigger questions arise. And if you have that heart at peace, and I'm not saying that Bufo experience gave it to him, I think he's a very peaceful person to begin with. And all the years of meditation, he can go into those spaces. But I will say, like what you're pointing to, that that was a pivotal part of what I was saying previously, is before you lose your cognition, you're already preparing for your death. So if you can be at peace, that to me is the most important. And so he can say that he has a heart at peace. So it'll be very exciting to see the use, the reverent and careful and mindful use of psychedelics as part of the end of life process. And I don't mean right at the end, it can mean that, but I also think it means the years. As we grow older, we know that we're closer to our own mortality. And I think that we're going to see some really exciting things happen with microdosing and psychedelics in general.
And I think Bufo is an interesting compound, of course, but also because it's so short acting. Like, I can imagine that a high dose journey on LSD, for instance, can also give so much confusion, maybe, or I don't know. We don't know, of course, what happens.
Oh,
Maybe you feel connected and more present, but yeah, that is something to explore also. But
yeah.
yeah,
We
I had a
don't. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I had a Bufo experience once in my life, and it was a strange, amazing. Of course, you're grasping for words because you're in the field that there are no words. But I, with every cell in my body, I was sort of in the 0 point field, or the non-dual state, or whatever. So, can imagine that. It gave me peace, but it can, confuse other people sometimes. But
I
yeah,
also
it's all about surrendering in that case. And if you're so that is why I never convince people to do things like this. And
Yeah. And I'd
but
also
yeah.
just like to mention that Henry did do a high dose journey with psilocybin in 20, I want to say 2022, around the early 2020s. And it was not a good experience. And so even before I started with the Microdosing Institute and doing the training, and when we talk about high dose, and I think that's part of what I look at as we need to tread carefully. We hear a lot about psychedelics and high dose and all the wonderful things it can do, but I all and for me, it was almost like it was a it was an insight into my decades of meditation practice, and it wasn't so unfamiliar to me, but for Henry, it was a very, very negative experience. And so I always tread carefully into when we talk about psychedelics, to set and setting, which means your own mental set. And I question, Henry being tethered to a psychedelic experience for many hours at a time. Maybe it has to do with dose or substance. I don't know enough about it. And there's so much more to learn, but that's why there's a certain degree of respect and reverence and mindfulness we need to integrate into preparing for these things.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, this whole journey with you and Henry, how this is journey impacted your relationship with Henry on a deeper level, in the sense of, like, yeah.
On a deeper level. Well, I really have to think about that. I do believe that we were brought together in a very karmic way, and I don't understand it all. I just know that I don't need to understand it, but I just know that it's meant to be. And I truly believe that any challenge we face is to help us peel the layers of who we are, the proverbial peeling the onion, the layers of the onion to get to our heart space. And so I think that I always felt from the moment his diagnosis was official that there are going to be blessings along the way. And today we had a very beautiful, pivotal discussion about what he wants in his future. And to be a witness to that was a deep, deep honor. So, you know, this life is a life of suffering. According to the Buddhists, you know, that's the first noble truth. And I think that people, it's not that we don't suffer, it's how are we in that suffering? Are we connected to our own true nature? Can we stay connected to love? Can we stay connected to others in our community and our loved ones? And it's how we get through the suffering and how we can go through that and maybe even transmute it to a place of well-being. And I think that because of our journey in this understanding that we're all going to die, and to know that another noble truth is, you know, we're all going to get old and die and suffer and get ill, you know, to be proactive about that and not to be caught in denial or that it's not going to happen. And then just like, then things become, they actually, you become a victim of whatever happens. So I don't think we feel that at all. And we are moving through it with so much dignity and grace. And I don't know in which ways it's going to, how it's affecting me. The one thing I can say is that I have so much respect for Henry to be able to allow our journeys to be shared in real time with people, because I think that hopefully we don't know how and in what ways, but if it can be of an inspiration and as like a beam of light for others, then maybe that's the purpose.
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks for sharing. I just realized this is also sort of a very personal question, of course, but yeah. So well, what would you like to touch upon on this whole topic? What would you like to share instead of like me asking questions?
Well, I think it's so, it feels very complete, Hein. It feels very complete.
Yeah. So, what, where can listeners learn from you more? So where can they find you?
Well, people can go to my website, my name, laurenaldifer.com, and then they can go to the blog where, this unfolding journey is being written about on a weekly basis. I also have several courses. As I mentioned, there are two free downloads for videos for caregivers. I am on social media, on Instagram at Lauren Aldifer, yeah, and on LinkedIn. And yeah, that's where people can find me and also yeah, communicate to me and share their journeys as well.
Yeah. And of course, you're on our website, and as a in our advisory board, and as a sort of a team member, because you're also one of our teachers on the masterclasses of the facilitator program, and so yeah, and what I like what you said is because we are also reaching out to all the people that are not on social media, are not on websites. So we are also reaching out to the caregivers and the people that know other people that are interested in this topic. So yeah, reach out to us via email or yeah, whatever. So yeah, any final words of wisdom?
I want to just express my gratitude to you and for having this platform, because I know that the work you do and so many people that you interview, it's just an honor to be here, an honor to be able to, you know, offer out, and we'll see where it goes. That's the magic of it all. But as long as it's being offered out from the heart, and my heart goes out to you for all the vision and hard work that you do, and for the to be a beacon for so many.
Yeah, And one infomercial, you also wrote a book, and it's a very beautiful book. In the EU, we have a partner shop selling your book, Mindful Microdosing, and so you can reach out to them to buy it. It's a really beautiful book to help you guide through your journey. That's really beautiful. And so yeah, so
And
thanks very much,
of course,
Lauren.
that's on Amazon in North America.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a, you have to Google it, and then you see all the vendors that, yeah. So thanks very much, Lauren, for sharing your story, and I will share the resources also for your website, because the blog, you're writing this every week, so people can follow you there. So we will definitely share that resource, and yeah. Thanks very much, everybody, for listening, and hope to see you soon. And see you one time in real life. That would be amazing. Yeah. Okay. Thanks. So, wow. I will stop recording.